War-weary Afghans are bracing for yet another spike in violence after US President Donald Trump scuppered a tentative deal with the Taliban not to make peace but to facilitate the beginning of the withdrawal of US troops after 18 long years. In a series of tweets on Sunday, President Trump surprised the world by cancelling an apparent plan to bring Taliban negotiators onto American soil, a highly sensitive move in itself, for talks at Camp David. The Afghan president was also apparently invited, despite the exclusion of the Afghan government from the preceding 11 months of talks with the Taliban. Few observers seem convinced with President Trump's claim that he called off the Camp David meeting because of a single attack that killed a US soldier last week. But what do Afghans think? Bilal Sawari is an Afghan journalist. I reached him in Kabul earlier.
I think this was quite a shocking revelation to the people of Afghanistan who were kept out of these talks, as well as their government, and even politicians who attended some of these intra-Afghan dialogues, excluding the Afghan government, were not privy to these details. I think what it also shows you is the contradictions in the American stance, because if we look at the last 11 months, we know that this was a fight for leverage on all sides and that Afghans were killed, including the Americans. So if this was about the life of an American soldier, if it was not about blood being spilled, I think you see the clear contradiction there. But I'm afraid that the Afghan government was never part of these talks, that these were closed-door conversations between the Americans as well as the Taliban. I also, as an Afghan, found it quite interesting that when the list was being prepared for these talks, I think the Afghans really didn't have the veto power. It was foreign envoys, it was the Taliban, and it was Pakistan, which is an idea that many Afghans were quite hostile to. So I hope from now on, the doors to the peace process may not remain closed for a while, because Afghanistan cannot afford it. Afghans need urgent respite from violence, and peace is the only way out of this conflict. I don't believe that anyone can win the war from here. So fingers crossed, at least for the sake of Afghanistan and the people of Afghanistan.
But what do you think comes next? I mean, in terms of these talks, and we can't call them peace talks, but these talks between the US and the Taliban, do you think that's now completely dead? I mean, what are the Taliban saying, for example?
Well, the Taliban said that the US is making a mistake and that it would have to come back to these talks. The Taliban are quite adamant that they even insisted on talks, let's say 18 years ago. But there's also a very deliberate and clear Taliban strategy, I think, at least for the last 11 months, which was talk in places like Doha, but fight on the ground in Afghanistan. And I mean, let's not forget, they really launched major, large-scale attacks against major provincial capitals. We remember the story of Kunduz a few weeks ago. Then it was Baghlan. And before that, they got closer to the city of Mazar-i-Sharif in northern Afghanistan, but then they were pushed back. Now, that's a province on the border with Uzbekistan. So if you are the government of Uzbekistan or you're Russia, it's quite alarming, because what happens when there's fighting in major provincial capitals here on the border with these countries? It's chaos. It's not a great situation. But I also must say that if we look back to the last 11 months, I think one can hold all sides responsible for the killings of ordinary Afghans. I mean, we saw entire families vanishing in a matter of seconds, not even minutes. So the people of Afghanistan continue to demand a comprehensive, long-standing ceasefire. I was in the province of Kunar in eastern Afghanistan in my hometown, and I met the mother of an Afghan soldier who had got killed in Helmand. This is a very poor family. They hardly have enough land to survive. I mean, what happens when coffins go back to smaller villages and valleys? They really fall like a thunder on those families, and it really breaks the backbone of societies in smaller villages and hamlets, as well as in cities and urban centres.
But do you think the Americans and President Trump are even considering those human dimensions to this conflict? I mean, it seems that President Trump just wants to get out. It's been 18 years. We want to get out.
I don't think that anyone in Afghanistan really is insisting on the forever stay of foreign forces. I don't think anyone wants that. But if the Americans want to leave, they should do it quite carefully and responsibly. Let's not forget what happened when the Russians pulled out. Afghanistan had a civil war that led to the rise of Taliban. Then the 9/11 attacks happened, and then the West came back. So Afghanistan's very painful past, that's not too long ago, is a stark reminder that the situation can get worse. And I mean, you also have to really ask the question anywhere in the world, not in Afghanistan, when President Trump tweets, is it a statement? Is it a government policy? Because we have seen the ridiculous amount of tweets by the U.S. president, including one, it was also something he said that he could kill 10 million Afghans and finish the war. So many Afghans are still hurt by those statements. And I don't think there's any predictability to President Trump in his tweets for the time being.
Bilal, presidential elections are due in about 3 weeks' time. What do you expect will be the implications from this crisis in these talks for the elections?
Well, the Taliban had always said that they will target the Afghan elections, which they call sham. They called Afghan politicians puppet. And they said that they would target anyone taking part. So they asked the people of Afghanistan not to take part. Now, the situation is quite different this time if you compare it to the last many elections, at least to the most recent one in 2014. There's not that excitement that we had in the past. I mean, you don't see rallies. The security situation has changed. But also, we saw in 2014 the quite fraudulent election between President Ashraf Ghani and Dr. Abdullah Abdullah. So I think many Afghans have lost faith on that front. But at the same time, this is a process that many Afghans are invested in. This is a national process. And quite frankly, I think Afghans remember the days when governments came with tanks and coup d'etats and civil wars. So there will be support for the election. But from now on, I'm afraid I can predict that there will be a devastating wave of attacks as well as an election. And let's hope that Afghanistan has a political solution once the election takes place. But the international community, I believe, is also responsible for the acceptance of fraud in these elections. At least that's what we have seen. But for the moment, the people of Afghanistan demand a comprehensive ceasefire. They need urgent respite from violence. As I speak to you, there are large-scale Taliban attacks against three key districts in northeastern Afghanistan, and civilians are often caught. These are just not numbers. These are lives. People are losing their land, their livelihood. And here in Kabul, as I am talking to you, I can hear gunshots. So you know that the country has many, many problems. Corruption, there's the issue of crime, there's the issue of lack of employment. And I think one day Afghans hope that they can focus on these real issues when there's some sort of peace.
And the Taliban now control about as much territory as they controlled when they were booted out by the Americans 18 years ago. Is it now inevitable, especially without some sort of talks going on, is it now inevitable that the Taliban will continue to expand its control and perhaps become more of a threat to the government directly?
The Taliban are strongest since they were removed from power in 2001. Remember, they were not finished. The Taliban today is a military and political movement, at least on the world stage as well. And they're using social media. They've got control on the ground. They've got better weapons. They've got better ammunition, not only support from Pakistan, but also Iran and Russia. So unfortunately, I see that threat. I see the threat of violence continuing. You also have the threat of Islamic State as well as foreign fighters. Now, one thing I want to mention here, in 1998, when you had foreign fighters and foreign jihadis, the world was not interconnected. They were not using social media apps. Today, they're using Telegram and WhatsApp in Afghanistan's faraway valleys and districts. And I'm afraid Afghanistan is a much insecure and dangerous place than it was in 2001.
Bilal Sawari, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Good to talk to you, Linda.
Afghan journalist Bilal Sawari in Kabul.